There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left.
Right from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
And oh man, we're back in the studio. You guys don't know, this new studio looks like the Black Lodge.
Yeah. Ooh.
And I'm the tiny man.
From Ooh. Twin Peaks?
Yes.
Ooh. Oh, I didn't want to. I actually ruined Twin Peaks for Marcus. At the end of Twin Peaks, it turns out there's three peaks.
Oh, my God.
God, those are fun jokes. So today we're talking about, we're switching from...
Well, who are we?
They know who we are.
No, man.
You go through it.
Every time.
Because
I am Ben Kissel.
It's always someone's first episode, Ben.
Welcome to the last podcast on the left. I am Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks.
Hi.
With us, as always... Henry Zebrowski.
Thank you. I actually like hear you say it. Cause I don't know why.
Because
you
always
say it with it just like the weird like little flicks of rage that show up in your eyeballs. Guys, we're getting spooky today.
Yeah. Yes, we're talking about ghosts. That's what I wanted to get to in the first place. This is the Enfield Poltergeist.
Stop playing Wipeout on your belly.
Yeah, why? I don't know. Henry is wearing Henry is wearing short shorts, but somehow they make you look more nude than if you were nude.
It's because they're lavender.
Lavender is the dirtiest color.
Yeah, it is.
So we're switching gears from a true crime to ghosts.
Absolutely. We're going to be covering the Enfield Poltergeist.
I am so excited for this.
It's scary.
Yeah. Well, the Enfield Poltergeist haunting occurred in the London suburb of Enfield from August of 1977 till April of 1979. It is by far England's most famous haunting and is one of the most documented poltergeist cases in history.
This is not a bullshit one like the Amityville Horror House.
No.
This is something that there are credible witnesses, a lot of instances, many different types of poltergeist behavior, all of them, some new shit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's obviously one of the most bona fide.
Mm-hmm. So what happens here? Now, this is a British ghost. Do they haunt you with meat pies and stuff like that? Does it change because it's over in the UK?
No, it's still... Well, I mean, it depends on the voices that you listen to. Of course, if a voice comes through a little girl, then the poltergeist is going to speak in a more British way. That is
hello
one of the...
Hello there, you want a polter tea?
Meanwhile, in America, it's like, hello there,
you want a 25-ouncer or a do?
I do want a 25-ouncer or a do.
You may know Enfield as the inspiration for the second Conjuring movie, but not surprisingly, Ed and Lorraine Warren's claims of involvement are, like most things with the Warrens, total bullshit.
Boo on the Warrens.
Yeah, boo on these people.
Well, they made a lot of money off of this stuff, that's for sure.
They made a lot of money. Now, most accounts place the Warrens at the site of the Enfield haunting for no more than a day, uninvited, mind you.
Really?
And even that just consisted of the classic Ed Warren, hey, how are you, let's make some money move that he was so well known for.
It was actually the inspiration for Alanis Morissette's song, Uninvited.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's very interesting.
It's never a good day when the ghost hunters show up at your door just randomly.
Yeah, just, hi.
Hey.
Hey.
The place is haunted, huh?
Heard your daughter's gotten fingered in the night by a ghost. I bet we can make some whole cold, hard cash off of that, off of these guys I know in fucking Vienna.
Hi.
Well, because these are what I also love is in Conjuring 2, they made Ed Warren Patrick Wilson, who is a gorgeous man.
Oh,
obviously,
he's wonderful.
And, and Vera Farmiglia?
Yeah.
Farmiglia?
Yeah, she was great.
Lorraine Warren, when in real life, the Ed and Lorraine Warren look like Pixar characters have come to life. They look like the guy, like they both look like the grandfather from Up.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, The Conjuring 2, like, it's not even really a ghost movie. It's a superhero movie.
It's a Christian superhero movie.
That's exactly what it is. It's a Christian superhero movie.
Kind of. I always just got, I thought it was a really great movie to remind us how comfortable lazy boys are. They showed that chair so damn much. I was like, I just want to be in it.
Now, the only reason why the Enfield case was chosen for The Conjuring 2 was because Warner Brothers doesn't own the rights to most of the Warren case files. So they had to scrape the barrel a little bit for a story good enough to follow up the first Conjuring movie, which was fucking awesome.
Which is really sad, though, because in real life, the actual story of the Enfield Poltergeist is a really compelling story. Basically, you got like a war-torn British family that's going through a lot of turmoil, like several girls on their menarches, their first periods coming out of them. You've got a mustachioed ghost hunter that becomes a new daddy to the family, and it's very kind of sweet, and everybody loves a new daddy because old daddy always did something bad.
I don't know how you describe this as kind of sweet in any way, but
I think it's kind of a sweet story.
It
All right, we'll get into it. Now, the only people who said the Warrens had a hand in the case were the Warrens themselves and the girl who was the focus of the haunting, Janet Hodgson, who interestingly only mentioned them when she was interviewed for the DVD extras for The Conjuring 2.
Ooh. Sort of like she was forced to by a contract or paid to. And one thing I will say about Janet Hodgkins, like later on, she looks like that no matter what she's doing, she has a gun to the back of her head.
Yes.
She looks haunted and fucked up.
Yeah. Hmm. Now, all of the real information for our coverage of the Enfield Poltergeist comes from one of the main investigators himself, Guy Playfair, who wrote the book This House is Haunted about the whole incident.
What's your book about? This house is haunted. It's very on the nose.
It's something very similar to when you have some sort of Chinese or Korean delivery to your home, and the fumes from the food, from the appetizers, they simply do not leave, no matter how much Febreze you use.
What's your book about?
The remnants of these fumes.
It's actually like, it's a super fun read, despite Guy totally not selling it at all in the preface. This is what he wrote.
If you are not sated by all the horrors and occult titillations of books or films, such as The Exorcist and its host of imitators, and are still hungry for a more exotic thrill, then this book is not for you.
Oh.
Readers may find some of it rather dull, and a not very good plot, and some terrible dialogue.
I like the honesty. I would continue reading.
But it's just all the... Basically, these guys are hardcore, amateur researchers, and they want you to show the world just how serious they're taking this, and it is a bit by bit recording of every single piece of activity that happened in that house.
Oh yeah, it gets a little tedious at times, but that's mostly because over the course of 19 months that they spent investigating this haunting, Guy Playfair and his partner Maurice Gross recorded over 1,000 instances of poltergeist activity.
Ooh, that's a lot of instances.
It is 1,000 of them.
1,000.
And also, over 1,000.
Wow.
And all of the dialogue from the book is taken from his actual field recordings of the family. And this is what I want to say about this family. They are not TV ready.
I know. Well, in The Conjuring 2, they were quite attractive.
It's interesting what Hollywood does.
Are they lying to us?
It's like they give them breasts.
Really?
Yeah, slap breasts on all of them. But she's only 12. Let's put some breasts on her.
Give me a six-pack or something, maybe two.
Now, whether you believe this story or not, all hinges on whether you believe Guy Playfair, Maurice Gross, the Hodgson family, their neighbors, and half a dozen other witnesses. Either way, it remains one of the most active, interesting, and at times, like we said, one of the sweetest poltergeist stories ever recorded.
It is. It's very Spielberg-y. What I'd also say, too, is that when you look this up, if you type in Enfield poltergeist into Google, it's going to pop up hoax first.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that try to discredit this and debunk this story. We're going to take you through all the information that we could gather about this haunting, and we're going to make you decide what sounds real to you.
Now, let's get to the haunting.
Let's do it. I can't wait. I want to hear about all 1,000 of them.
No, the haunting began small, as these things usually do. On August 30th, 1977, the Hodgson family, consisting of Mother Peggy and children Margaret, 14, Janet, 11, Johnny, 10, and Billy, 7, were going through a bit of a hard time.
Now, one of the best part about the Hodgson family is that they are like, they hit all of the British family stereotypes. Mm-hmm. You got old rag woman who washes rags in a big basin all day. That's the mommy. You've got Margaret, the unspoken of child with the tiny mouth, right? There's always one older sister slumped over, being like, I don't like it very much. You've got Janet, the center of the activity, who's sort of like cross between lively daughter, like an Arya Stark, but also mostly like a pesky orphan. She's like the type of person you'd be like, get out of here, and you toss a dollar to her and she runs out.
Oh, right? That's kind of fun.
You've got the sent away boy, which is the brother that is not around because he's been sent away.
He's sent to boarding school, and no one says why he was sent to boarding school. No one had told Guy Playfair why. He just keeps saying over and over again, he was sent to boarding school for an unspecified reason, which I was not privy to.
Just in front of a burning police station.
Yeah. He's trying to brush his teeth and they didn't allow it.
And then there's the unacknowledged one.
Yeah,
the last Billy. One, who's the Billy, who's just like, hey guys, so if it doesn't hurt no one, can I get a bit of attention? I'll just go back to being a pickpocket then.
That's it. He's like Donnie from Big Lebowski.
Well, this is like, it's classic poltergeist stuff because there's a lot of turmoil in the house. Peggy's husband had left not too long before all the activity began. And this guy, he was showing up with the new woman in his life every time he came by to pay child support. Although I'm not really sure why he had to come by the house to pay his child support every month instead of just mailing it in.
It seems European.
You want it to get there. Yeah. And, you know, he wants to look Billy in the eyes when he gives him that big money.
And I don't want to shame anyone, but Peggy did sort of look like if you took Louis Anderson from Baskets and deflated him. Like, and she does look like that.
Come on.
She's not a drag woman.
That's mean. She's a mother. She is a mother of four, Henry Zebrowski.
She's a mother of four. She's a good woman.
You got any rags?
Well, don't you want a clean rag, Henry?
Loves the family very much, and she is a good woman, Henry.
This is unbelievable. This is absolutely coming from Henry Zebrowski.
Jesus, Henry.
Who loves his mother so much, and now he's demonizing this British homemaker.
All my dresses are gray because you soaked you with rag water.
Well, the family was living in government-assisted housing, surviving on welfare and child support, which, of course, only added to the stress. The two daughters were also flowering.
That is actually
so to speak,
a much more disgusting way of saying going through puberty.
Which is, as we all know, among the most common causes of poltergeist activity.
But nothing was like listening to thin-lipped poltergeist experts from the UK fucking paranormal society all being like,
and so yes, the youngest lady was at a moment of the inception of the poltergeist activity had her menarche, her first period came out of her crawling like a beast from the swamp.
Well, it's a wonderful natural thing.
So one night, Janet.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Kissel.
No, thank you, Mr. Kissel. Like, are we still doing fucking dodgeball in sixth period?
Yeah. No, well, it's yes. Yes, periods are the theme of the day.
So one night, Janet and Johnny called to their mother to complain that their beds had been shaken. Peggy ignored it till the next night when she was called to their room once more. This time, the kids said that they had heard a shuffling noise, like someone had been dragging their feet across the floor while wearing slippers. And Peggy heard it too. And that sound was followed by four loud knocks. Knocks, not ham slaps.
A person who's too poor to be a folk singer. I came here to slap my body.
My belly's a drum.
Then the children's chest of drawers started sliding across the room towards the doorway, traveling about a foot and a half. Peggy pushed the drawers back, only to have it move again.
You back there, don't you move there again. All right, I've got rags and my water's getting warm. It's the opposite. You got cold water, slowly gets warmer. I like to be cold, so it don't wash as well.
That is kind of crazy.
Okay, enough of the rags.
Well, the rags are an integral part.
When she tried pushing it back a second time, she found that she couldn't budge it an inch. Understandably freaked out, the family decided not to bother her brother and his family who lived up the road, so they knocked on the door of their next door neighbors, the Nottinghams.
It's the Nottinghams. Of course it is.
Yes,
it's always the Nottinghams.
I think it's Nottinghams.
Nottinghams?
Nottinghams?
Nottinghams. I'm going to be winging it with a lot of these pronunciations.
Well, Nottinghams, I mean, that's a pseudonym. Really, the only people that we know the actual name of is the Hodgsons, who were known as the Harpers in the book. It wasn't until much later that they came out and gave their real name. Playfair was actually very good about not blowing up anybody's spot.
Well, it's a little bit stereotypical, though, isn't it? You just called them the Nottinghams?
Sure, yes. But it's also, honestly, their spot had already been blown up, because we're going to find out the first people they called is the reporters. But we'll go.
Yeah, but the reporters actually never revealed their names.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's
bad,
of course,
reporting.
I mean, no, Ben, that's British politeness.
It's responsibility.
The tabloids in the UK are horrible. It's a lot of full of nudes. They have nudes in their tabloids.
That's what makes it better. It's actually not horrible.
I don't know.
Better.
I don't know.
Vic and his son went over to check out the house and said they heard hollow knocks following them throughout the house, despite not a single other person being present besides the two of them.
I think it's interesting. And every single person that talked about Vic Nottingham, they all said the same thing, the same line.
He was a builder, so he wasn't afraid of nothing.
Builders are tough.
Wait, but at the same time, I think construction workers are always the first ones to get spooked in all the Abbott Costello movies.
Well, that's possible.
Like Scooby-Doo, they're like, yeah,
daddy.
They're tough, though. They're up there. They're not afraid of heights, I'll tell you that.
Now, this is very interesting. I just now discovered this. The difference between regular knocks and poltergeist knocks are audibly subtle, but the acoustic waves tell a different story. Mm. A 2010 study published in the Journal of Psychical Research compared the two types of knocks and made a fascinating discovery. They found that the regular knocks started at full amplitude and tapered off, meaning the peak of the sound wave was at the very beginning.
Okay, we're getting into sound waves.
We're getting into sound waves. Wow. Like, you know, when you do like... The sound is like, you just look at that.
Is that an empty knock?
That is a regular knock.
That's a real regular knock. That's okay. A regular knock. I'm not stoned enough to completely understand sound waves. No.
We do have to do an entire new podcast, Knock Talk, and we will get into knocks.
But the poltergeist knocks show a different kind of sound wave, with the peak coming after the sound has already begun, kind of like the seismograph readings an earthquake gives off.
Secondary knock.
Well, it's not a secondary knock.
It's just how the knock flows.
Yeah, the knock begins before the top of the knock hits.
Top of the knock.
So it's like, instead of being like... It's like
weird. Man, and only the most lonely person with headphones could ever understand what that means. Because I can see Marcus.
Wait, you mean me? I am legitimately confused on if this is an interesting conversation. But it is. It's a lot of knock talk.
This is fascinating. The acoustic signatures are different.
Okay.
I just see you at home with your headphones that are even bigger than the ones you have here.
Comically large.
Being like, I can really hear it. Caroline is just scared in the other room, just smoking a pickle.
No.
This is my fourth pickle today. He's talking about knocks again.
So after hearing the knocks and finding nothing, the Harpers, at a loss, called the police. While one officer was sensibly checking out the plumbing...
Yeah, sometimes a big turn in there, he'll fuck up everything. Not to say he didn't clear in front of the children, but sometimes if you squeeze out a big, long fucking piece of shit out of yourself and get it all gobbed up in the fucker.
You get the feeling that if they called him over for, like, an armed robbery or something, he'd be like, I'm gonna go check the toilet. I don't know. I always just go check the toilet
first. It's just him shitting.
They took our television. I'm gonna go make sure there's nothing in the toilet.
Well, he was checking out the plumbing. The other cop, along with everyone else in the room, saw a chair wobble from side to side before it slid 4 feet across the floor.
And what makes this case different than any other poltergeist case that I've ever really read about is that this cop not only saw this, but wrote an official report saying that she saw this chair slide across the ground. And I watched an interview with her, and she immediately was like, this is not a person that, just to look at her, like, honestly, she's just not going for attention. This obviously was brought a lot of negative attention to her. She was immediately made fun of. It discredits you. This is the problem with the paranormal world in general. Look at me. How I've been discredited.
Oh, my God.
What a victim.
We always say that. So the chair was wobbly.
The chair moved 4 feet across the floor. It wasn't just wobbly. It moved 4 feet across the floor.
All right. Get on it. Sit on it. This is like a Disney movie.
All these things do at first start off pretty innocent. They start off, you know, very calm, and then they escalate.
Why didn't the police light up the chair? Shoot it.
Because it's not America, and they don't have guns.
Yes. And thankfully, I mean, because also they found out the chair was painted white.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
But since no crime had been committed and no perpetrator could be found harassing the Hodgsons, the police left. And the activity only escalated from there.
Well,
the next day.
Do you wonder if the toilet was clogged?
The toilet was not clogged.
All right, good.
The knocking wasn't coming from the plumbing.
Their shit was so thin from how much like bone broth that they ate.
I see.
Night.
Okay, I'm just asking questions.
The next day, Johnny's marbles and his Legos started flying through the air, seemingly of their own volition. Peggy's father came over, picked up one of the marbles that had hit the bathroom door, and found that the marble was hot to the touch.
I gotta say, these marbles are as hot as my marbles were when I met your mam.
It's kind of a gross
way. Oh, yeah. She gripped me. He gripped me good, your father did.
I don't think we want to get into all that.
After 3 more days of flying marbles, Peggy called the Daily Mirror. thinking that they might have some idea of who to get a hold of to check all this out.
And this actually has precedence now. When we look at trailer trash here in America,
that is not an appropriate term for individuals who reside in trailers.
But like we talk about Window Invader, like the guy, the famous. We have a lot of famous eyewitnesses in this country.
Uh-huh.
That's what they did the same thing, being like, they'll put us on the TV.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to come and like we'll tell the whole world about these ghosts, and everyone's going to be like, oh shit, ghosts.
It did seem like they wanted attention.
No, right? It's not
Why would you contact the Daily Mirror?
Because they want somebody to do something about it.
Yeah. Okay. And the cops wouldn't do anything. All of this activity is happening. They knew that sometimes newspapers covered ghost stories, and they thought that maybe the Daily Mirror might have somebody that they could contact, or at the very least publicize their case, so somebody who might have an idea on how to make this stop might see the news story.
We'll publish this right between the nudes and the story about how Prince Charles hasn't ejaculated in 30 years.
But this was before the Daily Mirror was complete trash. This is when it was coming up. It was like coming up the line.
All right.
And also, you have to understand, these are also not bright people. No, absolutely not. Well, you're going to hear more details that show that information.
Functioning plumbing, from what I understand.
Street smart.
I don't even know if it's that. You can't just say because somebody's dumb.
They're street smart.
I like that. Well, I mean, yeah, Peggy showed some deductive reasoning later on.
Sure.
Well, Peggy called the Daily Mirror. She thought maybe they could help him out, but instead, the Daily Mirror smelled a story and sent out a reporter, Douglas Bentz, and a photographer, Graham Morris, out to investigate.
Cool.
But nothing happened, at least until the reporters gave up and left. As soon as they left, marbles and Legos started shooting around the room again, and the reporters were called back before they even reached the street.
Hmm.
And as the photographer was snapping photos, a Lego brick flew towards him and smacked him hard enough in the face to leave a bruise that lasted a week.
Now, that's fun. It does sound like a dumb, small thing, but if you've ever had a little brother or a little sister whip a Lego at you,
it'll hurt.
I've had Jackie do.
Yeah.
It hurts.
Yeah, four corners on a Lego.
Well, the only people who could have thrown the Lego from that angle were the other reporter and one of the Nottinghams.
Ooh. Yeah. And that's the one thing that Playfair also hits in the book a lot, where he keeps saying it over and over again, which is what does make it a difficult book to read, but being like, these things are flying around, and nobody is near where they're coming from.
Yeah.
They are coming from other sides of the room, they're materializing from the ceiling, they're coming up from crazy angles, and they're going really fast. And,
right.
So, and the thing is that you'd see somebody throw it that fast.
You don't think a cat could do it?
I'm
asking that question.
There were no cats.
There was no cat. No, the cat was boiled. It was boiled on their Thursday boil night.
Oh, I see.
All right, this is the UK. All right, they boil whatever's around to eat.
Okay, well, you never know what a cat's up to.
Well, the reporters came back a couple days later with a senior reporter in tow, a man named George Fallows. According to Peggy, he was the first person to ever say the word poltergeist in her presence.
Cool. God bless you.
Poltergeist!
God bless you then.
Your place is haunted. This house is haunted.
God bless you then.
Now, Fallows explained to Peggy that often poltergeist activity centers around girls going through puberty. Now, after Fallows patiently explained to Peggy what the word puberty meant.
Yeah, she knew what the word puberty meant.
She absolutely did not know what the word puberty meant.
A grown woman with four children didn't know what puberty meant?
Did not know what puberty meant.
She didn't know. She was like, oh, she mean when Jenny gets the splatters?
You know what? Street smart. Street smart.
Even people on the street understand something's happening to her.
Yeah, I don't know what that's all about.
But she did. I mean, she knew what puberty was. She just didn't know the word puberty, because once Fallows patiently explained what he meant by puberty, she confirmed that Margaret, the oldest, had flowered the previous March.
Oh, yeah, she's getting a drip. Oh, yeah, she's getting a drip just like me and grandmama, fortunately.
Right. That's fine, then.
The reporter then tried to trick Peggy by asking her if she was interested in moving, as people like Peggy, who lived in government-assisted housing, a lot of times claimed houses were haunted in order to get a new place.
Mm.
But Peggy had no interest in leaving the house she'd lived in for 12 years, so Fallows suggested she contact the Society for Psychical Research.
Ooh, the Society for Psychical Research. That sounds like a lot of suspenders and a lot of khaki pants.
You are correct, but they are thorough researchers. Uh-huh. And this was one of the last bastions of like 1800, like in the UK specifically. It came over to America for a little bit, but the obsession with the supernatural and the paranormal and the idea of cold, reasoned men and women going out there and doing their due diligence and to research it as unexciting as possible.
Yeah, you do get the feeling when they're driving in traffic, they're just like, slow down. Everyone needs to slow down.
Well, let's let a very British woman named Mary Rose Barrington explain to us just what the SPR is.
Ooh, cool.
The Society for Psychical Research was set up in 1882 to investigate those faculties of man, real or supposed, that are not explicable on any generally recognized hypothesis. It doesn't have any fixed ideas or opinions, and anyone can be a member whether they actually believe in paranormal phenomena or not. But of course, obviously, most of us do are convinced that there is some reality in these things.
Just spice it up for a second.
Yeah, just get a little bit interesting, please.
If you spiced it up, Henry, that would make it undignified.
I don't care.
You must keep it with the most utmost of dignity.
Entertain
at all times.
Entertain me.
Dame Edna and Julia Childs. That's what she sounds like, a combo.
Now, although the SPR had been a fixture of the paranormal community for almost 100 years by 1977, almost none of its members were interested in actually going out into the field to face a poltergeist head on when the Enfield case was brought to their attention. None, that is, except Maurice Gross.
I love this guy. He's like a Vincent Price character.
Yeah.
He has a real motive. He's out there. He lost his daughter. He's going to look for these ghosts. And also, he looks like a boss munchkin. He looks like the head of the Lollipop Guild. He's got the silliest mustache in the world.
Sounds like someone will frighten a ghost.
He looks like he commandeers a steampunk Zeppelin.
I like him.
Now, Maurice Gross was a fairly successful inventor who had a lifelong interest in the paranormal, particularly concerning the question of what happened to a person's spirit when they died. The interest only grew after his daughter Janet died in a motorcycle accident in 1976, fueled by a series of strange coincidences immediately following her death. Just before she died, Janet had sent her brother a birthday card with a humorous illustration of a person with a head injury. The text read,
"I was going to send you a bottle of toilet water for your birthday, but the lid fell on my head." That is actually based on, again, at the time, there was a drought happening in the UK, and so this was a very topical birthday card. It's like saying if we had sent a card and trying to explain to being like, your age is just too damn high, and then you have to explain there was so a one-pointer in a mayoral race, and there was a man who was famous saying the rent is too damn high.
Well, I thought toilet water was what they called cologne.
What?
I don't know.
Yeah,
It was explained in a book. What?
Yeah, toilet water is what they...
You're talking about eau de toilette?
Yeah,
that's
toilet water.
I'm about to throw my headphones at you. That's like a French term for fancy water.
No, I heard that toilet water was what they called cologne.
No. The English called... I'm going to Google toilet water.
Wow. Sure, of course Google toilet water.
Yeah. Wow, it's all about the plumbing and toilet water here on this poltergeist episode of The Last Podcast on the Left.
Dictionary, toilet water, a dilute form of perfume.
Wow. Henry, you lose.
I just have
Marcus
never
Parks
heard that
for
before.
The victory.
I'd like to see a panel of people from the UK tell us that they call it toilet water.
The internet just did.
Yeah.
The internet is filled with lies.
Well, yeah,
fake
most
news.
Of them you believe.
Not fake news. Not fake news. Toilet water is perfume. Now, Janet's...
I don't know if I want to wear it, but...
Now, Janet's personal inscription on that card read...
And there won't be much of that left soon either.
Talking about her head.
It was not talking about her head. It was talking about water.
It was talking about the head. No, but the lid
Marcus,
fell on my head.
Oh, my goodness.
But the lid fell on my head.
I am so close to nerd alert in this entire conversation.
It was about the water.
I was going to send you a bottle of toilet water.
We've got a nerd alert.
Context. Says that there won't be much left of that either. She was pointing towards the head.
She was. You meant about the water. It was not. She's not a comedian.
You know what?
No, that's the thing.
What if
why
it was
there,
a double meaning? I'm going to say it was a double meaning. We're going to end the conversation.
No, absolutely not. Because
we have to get to the haunting, and you guys are arguing over cologne is toilet water, and what the heck she's talking about in the stupid birthday card before she dies.
Well, in the first of many coincidences, Janet's cause of death was indeed head injuries. because there wasn't much.
Because motorcycle accident.
No, no, yes, we got the water.
I'm sure there were some knee injuries and shoulder injuries.
It's a water joke.
Yeah. Then a broken clock identical to the one the Grosses owned that belonged to a friend suddenly started working the day of Janet's death and stopped at 4:20.
Ooh, yeah. Legalize it.
Yeah, that's my
$26 billion could be made federally.
And 4:20 is just about the time in which Janet died.
Ooh.
Then, on the day of Janet's funeral, Maurice asked for a sign that his daughter might still be around in some form or another. He thought a good sign might be rain, as the area had indeed been caught in a drought for months.
This is what I'm fucking talking about.
Yeah, well, I'll concede that it was in a drought, but...
It was a joke about the drought.
Nonetheless, can you imagine, though, if he asked for a sign that his daughter was still alive and she just stood up in her casket and was just like, I'm burning down here! He's like, never mind, I don't want to know.
Sorry.
Go back.
And the day after the funeral, Maury saw that the roof below Janet's bedroom was wet, while the rest of the roof was bone dry.
Ooh.
Maurice wrote down his experiences, presumably to deal with his grief, submitted it to the SPR, and applied for membership soon after. It wasn't long until George Fallows called about the Enfield case, which involved a little girl with the same name as Gross's deceased daughter.
And if you
it's
know
all
anything,
coming together.
But if you know anything about magical thinking, this idea of synchronicities popping up all the time, that is a part of what they talk about at the SPR, and the idea of a true weird spiritual moment or a non-physical, like, mental trail. Like, this kind of, the idea is that the universe is, like, taking you here. It's
yeah.
kind of fun.
It's like when you break up with a girl, and then all you do is see her name everywhere.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Huh.
It's kind of interesting. Weird. Remember that? Remember you ever do that?
Just spelling in the spaghetti, and meanwhile, but then you're just hacking at the spaghetti with a butcher's knife.
No. I love spaghetti.
And within an hour of receiving that phone call, Maurice Gross pulled up to the front driveway of the Hodgson residence, and he would be a central part of their lives for another 19 months.
So now, this guy, I mean, he really did not have a lot going on. He was right. He was ready to go.
I mean, it was his hobby. It was like pretty much nights and weekends. He was an inventor, so he was a self-made man. He pretty much wrote his own ticket.
Does he, not to reference the Big Lebowski again, but does he look like the guy who's trailing Jeffrey Lebowski, the heavyset guy?
No, he's a little taller and lankier than that.
Yeah, and he's just got a funny mustache, and he truly believes in what is happening in this house. Yeah. That's a part of what it is. That's the mark of how crazy the fucking activity was in that house, is that he showed up and things are just flying around. Like, drawers are opening, like, bathroom doors are opening, closing. It's like pandemonium in there. It's like at the, it's in, like, Poltergeist, when he opens the door and it's just the whole place is just swirling in there. We're going to find out that this is also Poltergeist's loosely based off of this story.
Well, yeah, it's this and another story. They kind of meshed them together. Yeah.
Sure.
Now, it took 3 days in the Hodgson house for Gross to have his first experience with the entity. In the middle of the night, Gross and three men from the Daily Mirror heard a crash from Janet's bedroom. When they opened the door, they found that a chair had boosted forward 4 feet and it spun backwards.
Ooh.
To make sure Janet was asleep and not the perpetrator of the chair boosting, Gross opened her eyelids to find her eyes rolled backwards, as the eyes do when one is in a deep sleep.
Okay.
He also lifted her arm and let it drop and gave her head a little push.
Ooh, and then he called a WWE ref over and he counted her out a 10 count.
Yeah.
By all measure, Janet was fast asleep, as pretty much the Hodgsons were all ridiculously hard sleepers.
I think it comes from the gentleness of life of being a little simple. I think that they can just... Janet was the most clever one, but the way he talks about how he tried to wake them up, because he did a lot of this stuff. He's just like, check to see if they're asleep. And then just playing with their eyeballs and like shaking them and stuff, and they're still like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, poking
it's like
with
in
needles.
What About Bob, when they're trying to wake him up out of the bed and then the alarm goes. It's always that.
Now, after a couple more weeks of standard poltergeist activity, which Gross hadn't directly seen himself yet. He just kind of heard things from other room. Janet would come up and say, hey, this pillow flew across the room. Gross attended a meeting of the SPR and announced he was in the middle of a case and could use some help. Luckily for him, Guy Playfair, author of This House is Haunted,
what's it about?
was in the audience. But it would still be a little while before Guy Playfair would join the fray, as Playfair had just finished another book and had planned a nice little holiday for himself.
It's definitely like a movie, because when he used to talk with Maurice, he immediately was like, well, I'll come and I'll stay for like a day or so, or maybe 3 or 4 days. Then it turned into 19 months. Mm-hmm. That Gross also got incredibly sick during one whole section of it for like 2 to 3 months. He was sick.
Yeah.
And then he was like, all right, this is your case now. Mm-hmm. And he's stuck in there. And I mean, Maurice Gross is like a charming man. He's like a sweet, fun, like grandpa-like. Guy Playfair is not charming. He's a little like, hello.
Yeah, I heard he's dull.
He's a paranormal author.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Oh, when Gross returned to the Hodgson home, he finally saw the entity at work for the first time. Marbles zoomed through the air past his head, appearing as if they were coming from behind the children. Hmm. He then heard Peggy say from the other room,
there's a noise in the bathroom.
Oh.
When Gross walked over, he saw the bathroom door open and close on its own 4 times, followed by a sudden cool breeze, as often happens in poltergeist cases.
Hey, Maurice, while you're here, eh? That's another noise in the bathroom.
That's kind of funny.
That's what I did. I made the noise myself.
Yeah, they do just, I mean, ghosts just act like drunks. They just act like sailors.
Just,
you know,
throwing things around, opening and closing doors.
Well, they're oftentimes compared to children. Mm-hmm. They're like childlike ghosts. They are looking for attention in some way. What it seems like, what they say a lot of times is that with poltergeist activity, the hypothalamus of the person is the center of the poltergeist activity, like fires up. So essentially it's either an entity or just random energy that is using a chunk of our brain as an amplifier, like sort of like a Wi-Fi router. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's just throwing things around the house.
If you could train it to turn on the TV. This is before remote controls.
They had remote controls in the late 70s. Oh yeah.
Huh. Well, I also think you could train the ghost to do it. Get him cooking.
Well, the funny thing, you say that poltergeists are like children. The funny thing about that is that poltergeist activity becomes more and more sophisticated as time goes on. Almost as if the
energy... they're filling out the New York Times crossword puzzle?
No, they're not filling out the New York Times crossword puzzle, but the things that they do become more and more difficult.
And complex.
And they start to communicate a lot more. And the more you communicate with them, the better they get at it, almost as if they're learning. After the marble incident, Gross saw Janet walk into her bedroom, followed by 3 marbles smashing into the door as she walked through. And the strangest thing about the marbles is that when they hit the floor, they didn't bounce, nor did they roll. Hmm. They stayed exactly where they landed as if they were made of metal, and the floor was a magnet.
Cool.
It's really interesting, and they kept trying to recreate it, too, which is kind of...
They just kept trying to throw marbles at the floor all night long.
It's a great house to be a kid in. I would love to be one of the seven-year-old. This is fun.
I think we're going to get to the fact that, admittedly, the two little girls, Janet and Margaret, did say that they did fake some things.
They faked about 2%.
Yes, but what I think what happens is that it is a lot of fun. Yeah. I think that they are now in the middle of this thing, and they don't... We're going to get to how much it destroys their lives, mm-hmm. and how much they wanted to keep Morris Gross around because new daddy is there and everybody's happier when new daddy's around.
Yeah. Sure.
Now, it was fairly obvious by this point that Janet was the focus of the activity and would be for the next 19 months. This, of course, led the debunkers to claim that an 11-year-old girl was just playing a ridiculously elaborate trick on everyone for almost 2 years straight.
Hmm.
But, like we said, it is true that Janet got caught faking once or twice, but that does not automatically discount every instance, especially since these events, as we'll find out, were witnessed by multiple people. And in fact, the debunkers on this case are surprisingly weak.
Yes, because
really?
the witnesses are really strong. We have reporters, we have... police officers. We have psychiatrists. They're going to come in and see some weird, crazy shit.
And they're bunkers.
Yes, we got ventriloquists.
Yeah. Oh, and if you come can't in. Trust a ventriloquist,
magicians,
and nothing's more trustworthy than a man who tricks you with cards.
Well, the best that debunkers can do is to say that people are stupid and eyewitnesses can never be trusted. Now, I will agree, eyewitnesses are notoriously unreliable when it comes to singular events. Mm-hmm. But when there are over 1,000 events witnessed by multiple people over nearly 2 years, it gets a little harder to write off.
Yes. Yeah. And the fact that Maurice Gross and Peggy Hodgson never asked for money.
Nope.
It ruined their lives, this whole thing. It bankrupted Maurice Gross.
Yeah.
He sort of lived the rest of his life defending the work that he did here because this would become, I mean, everything that he's known for.
It's kind of sad. The Warrens got all the credit for this thing, huh?
Yeah.
In The Conjuring 2.
At least now, yeah, in The Conjuring 2. I mean, the debunkers, the best they can do is they just go,
nah.
Like, nah, I don't, nah.
Let's go to the bar.
Now, I mean, as far as the other reasons for them faking it, you know, it could be said that Maurice Gross was doing it to deal with the death of his daughter.
Definitely.
You know, Guy Playfair had a book to write.
Yes, even though he constantly said, oh, I didn't want to write a book.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, you just keep that. The more you say it, the more it sounds like you wanted to write a book.
Yeah.
Janet was doing it for the attention, and Peggy was doing it to think about anything else but her husband sleeping with a young, or her ex-husband sleeping with a young
girl. And the rags piling up.
Well, I know. She's got a lot to do.
Jen is also obviously the smartest person in that house, even as an 11-year-old girl.
Yeah, like, she's very clever.
Everybody else is pretty dim. Only because it's like, I mean, Peggy just kind of comes from working class neighborhood in UK. She's just not, she just doesn't have that kind of faculty, I think, to organize this type of, this long of a hoax. Well, and Janet is kind of stuck in this, kind of being held back by this family.
Did they try to throw away the marbles?
Well, we'll find out exactly.
Okay, because I would throw those marbles away.
They tried that with disastrous consequences.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, at any rate, author Guy Playfair decided to join the case after a front page story in the Daily Mirror and a radio appearance by Peggy Hodgson and Mrs. Nottingham, in which the neighbor said she saw an impression on Janet's bed as if someone either was or had been lying there.
Yeah, her ex-husband.
Even though there had been nobody in the room. What are you talking about, her ex-husband?
It was a tiny little lump, too. It's a baby lump.
Oh, this is Janet's bed.
Yeah.
Not Peggy's bed.
No.
Forget about it.
And the impression is not going to be there for years afterwards.
The mental impression.
Yeah, because you imagine what that builder's weird body was like making those poor children.
I heard he's a brave guy.
Now, when Guy Playfair showed up in mid-September of 1977, the mood in the house was so tense that just the appearance of a daddy long legs in the kitchen caused what he described as an unreasonable panic.
Whoa! I understand. Daddy Longlegs are kind of creepy.
I love them.
Okay.
Problem was, nothing happened in Playfair's presence, at least at first. So, in an effort to catch Janet, as Playfair wasn't convinced yet, he and Gross made a big production of going down the stairs, and then they snuck back up again.
This is how they thought to fool the kids. And they were like, all right, going downstairs for the night.
That's a good idea there, Guy. I guess we should do that.
Yep. Down the stairs we go. And then they would go.
Start clamming together coconuts like Monty Python.
And then they would walk back up silently.
Oh, I see. Like criminals in a Sherlock Holmes play.
Now, that's when the marble dropped, just as it had before. Straight to the floor with no bouncing or rolling. This time, right in front of Playfair. And this is when he tried to replicate it. Over and over and over again, just dropping the marble on the floor over and over again in the middle of the night. But he couldn't make it happen.
This is a fun little game I like to play called the silly little dropping game. I sometimes like to call it dropping the metal baby.
Why?
Menage. And sorry, that was the first thing I was thinking of was how everyone had their menages in here.
This is where Scooby would get scared.
Oh. Well, this is when Guy Playfair decided that this case was worth sticking around for. Playfair invited the Daily Mirror photographer back for another go-round to see if he could capture proof. But they found when they set up the state-of-the-art equipment, all three of the flashbulbs failed to go off. Mm. And this would be a running theme in the Enfield poltergeist haunting, just as it is with most other poltergeist cases. Electronics and mechanical objects just don't work as they should around poltergeist activity.
Interesting.
And as with most of this stuff, this can be taken either as proof that paranormal activity is afoot or proof that nothing is going on and all these people are just lying about their equipment malfunction.
And right. I think it just comes down to what you believe in. If you believe in it or not. And I think that what we have talked about before with UFO cases specific, sometimes with ghosts, it is a very personal experience.
Yeah.
They just talk about the vibe in that house. Everybody who talks about the Enfield house where they were, they said it felt strange.
Yeah.
It felt like there was somebody in there. It felt like they were being watched all the time. They walk around. It's a very personal experience. Being haunted, like being abducted, is more of a weirdly personal psychedelic experience than anything else because it's the activity's coming from inside of your brain.
Like you're tripping on acid.
Yes, and it's a little girl is projecting her reality out onto a bunch of people in a room and are kind of subjected to it, like subjected to her trip. It's very interesting, but I think that you can really only see the haunting from inside of it.
There should be a camera company that makes cameras that can hold up to a poltergeisting. I mean, is poltergeisting a term?
I think we can make it one.
Poltergeisting.
So is this how you're going to CEO a company? You're just going to say stuff being like, we need candy cane shoes. Can you guys
because
do that?
Love, yeah, of
you
course. Do that. You lick them off of yourself at the end of the night.
So soon after the photographer incident, the first of many disturbing events involving a pillow occurred.
Ooh,
one night, Many disturbing events with pillows.
I know, but we're not talking. This isn't your origin story, so it won't be so disgusting.
And one night, Playfair and Peggy noticed an indentation on a pillow that appeared to be the same size and shape as a child's head, even though no one had been laying there.
Ooh.
After seeing this, Peggy decided that the ghost was definitely a child, and she had good reason for thinking so, because years earlier, down the street, a 4-year-old girl had been smothered to death by her father, who killed himself right after.
Wow.
And the reason why Peggy thought that the spirit had settled into their house was because she, having been acquaintances of this family, had acquired some of their furniture.
Don't take the furniture!
So she died on this couch.
Just run.
Can we have it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I can just take it then.
You can take it. It's totally haunted.
Yeah.
It's going to ruin your life.
That's great, but it's free.
Yeah, you can take it.
And I can squat all over it.
Yeah, it's going to ruin your life. It's totally haunted.
Great.
Yeah.
Now, once the activity started, she threw all that furniture out.
Good.
But she was convinced that the spirit had stayed behind. And speaking of Peggy's sensitivity, she said she could always tell when the poltergeist was about to make trouble, as she'd get a headache in the same spot in her head right before everything went to hell every time.
And I got to tell you, it's different than the other pains me got. Yeah, I got hook feet. You know what I mean? I got sandy ankles. There's everything down there. I got rag lung.
Hold on. Hold on. You got rag lung?
I got rag lung from the fibers.
From the fibers of all the rags you clean.
Always scraping and digging it. There's the hard stains on the rigs.
Well, here. I never heard of that before.
Well, it's because you're not a rag woman, are you?
I'm not. I didn't even know that was a job. I did not know that.
And the activity wasn't just specific to the Hodgson house. Once, when the Hodgson family was down the street at Peggy's brother's house, a plastic rod from a toy suddenly materialized in front of Peggy's sister-in-law as she was pouring tea.
And that is one of the most rare forms of poltergeist activity, and it happens
so
a lot.
It's following them.
It just pops up. It follows her. It follows Janet.
Yeah. It follows Janet.
It follows Janet, but not too far, which we'll find out later. That's the interesting thing, is that it follows Janet, but it only follows her so far.
It's kind of cool, though, like too, Wi-Fi. If you're Janet.
Again, it's like Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Oh.
Now, then came the apparitions, seen not just by Playfair, Gross, or the Hodgsons, but neighbors as well. The brother saw the first one. He saw a light a foot tall burning in the Hodgson's window, which slowly faded away.
That is crazy. The idea of walking into a house, because he walked over in one house and there was just, it looked like a floating fluorescent bulb was just in front of him.
Yeah.
Ooh, a hip house.
And that same day, both Vic Nottingham and Peggy saw an old woman with gray hair appear in different windows, completely independent of each other. And later on, young Johnny saw an apparition of an old man with big white teeth staring at him.
Clean, disgusting, nice, English, American-looking teeth.
Don't worry there, mate. It's just me, Jimmy Savile.
Nothing can go wrong here. Jesus, he scrapes her name in the back of his record store wall. Ugh. God.
The incident with the old woman happened only a month into the case, and already 15 people had seen something and were convinced that something paranormal was happening in the house. That's when Playfair made the first of his hundreds of audio recordings, hiding the recorder in the Hodgson house to see if the phenomena still occurred when no one outside of the Hodgsons were present.
Honestly, this is where the research, their idea of trying to get unfettered, like unbiased information that they could put down gets a little creepy.
Yeah.
Because they definitely put cameras inside of a little girl's rooms without them knowing. But I don't think that they're creepy. I don't think that
the whole situation's kind of creepy.
I think they're sexless. I think Gross and Playfair
going on.
I actually do think they are like the sort of things that we would think like, that's a little creepy. Like that's a little sexual and weird. It just doesn't cross their mind at all.
Well, they're ghost hunting.
Yeah. They're searching for the truth. They're real scientists.
Yeah.
Well,
unemotional Spocks.
Slow down.
Now, the audio on that first recording wasn't great as the family was watching Escape from the Planet of the Apes that night while the recorder was going.
I think these are real monkeys. You think they're just playing monkeys? I don't know, Mother. You look at them, you're like, well, a monkey would have a monkey's face now, wouldn't it? Actor's going to act his face. Janet, you are the smartest one.
We're trying to get the ghosts on audio here if you want to keep it down.
There's
during
monkeys
the
in a tiny box in the house.
Yeah. Really
we gotta get rid of this box. This box showed me monkeys. It showed me wars.
It's a VHS player.
Escape from the Planet of the Apes was being watched very loudly, but the knocks still
registered.
Ooh.
It's very interesting because it sounds like a recording of a knock is being played in the house. Mm-hmm. It's a very hollow sound. It doesn't sound like it's there. It sounds like everything's fake.
Yes,
it's very interesting.
And it moves around. You know, it moves from the walls to the ceiling. And what they said mm-hmm. about the knocks as well is the sound, it sounded like it came from inside the walls or inside the ceiling, because right above Maurice Gross, he said one time he heard a knock. The floor was carpeted right above him. The floor in the mm-hmm. room right above him was carpeted, but the knock did not sound like a hand rapping on a carpeted, maybe muffled a little floor. It sounded hollow. It sounded like it came from inside.
Possible a little rodent? Is it a rodent knocking there, trying to get in?
That was actually Peggy Hartson's like running joke. Like, she'd just say, well, and Maurice back.
Yeah, which is kind of cute. Yeah. It's kind of cute, but there were obviously many rats in there. But they were trying to make their way to America.
Oh. Well, Playfair then arranged for a husband and wife team of mediums named Annie and George Shaw to drop by the Hodgson house to see if they could make some sort of contact with this thing.
Sure.
Annie sat down and told the Hodgsons that the spirit was most likely going to speak through her, but there was no reason to be afraid. She invited the spirit in and immediately let out a witchy cackle.
Oh, that's good. I thought a fart could be funny, too. Well, that's just me.
And then she spat at her husband, who quietly responded with,
I've been spat at by better people than you. Now look at this. Look and see what went wrong, and we'll show you how to put it right.
And then Annie replied,
Goza! Goza, help me! Elvie, come here, Goza!
And this is where Dan Aykroyd got the name Gozer from.
It's really? True. Because he's brought up this book, This House is Haunted, several times.
Oh, mm-hmm. my goodness.
He is us.
Yeah,
he is.
I love Dan Aykroyd. Yeah, he is hilarious.
This book came out in 1980, and you know, and around, like, and he started writing the Ghostbusters script around this time. Of course, like, Dan Aykroyd just, I mean, he just eats this stuff up. He loves paranormal stuff. And he said himself that Gozer is where they got it from, because they wanted something that had some sort of real world connection.
He totally believes in aliens as well. There's a documentary where he's talking about aliens.
Unplugged on UFOs.
But then he talks about how he just like slept through it. He's like, I didn't get out of bed.
He did.
And that's the whole story. But it's like, get out of bed. You're an alien aficionado.
He's tired.
Anyway.
So George described Gozer as, quote,
a nasty piece of work, a sort of black magic chap.
Cool.
Elvie, on the other hand, was said by George to be an elemental, which is a lower form of energy that does all the day-to-day ghost stuff for higher powers. A lot like what the Greys do in the alien world.
Yes, and also sort of like what Slenderman proxies do, and when they're not being just bent over a fucking bench while like Slenderman.
I don't think we need to get into this creepy pasta, erotica pasta.
Works it around their hole while they scream, wondering if
that
they
was
can take
last.
It.
We don't need to revisit the horniness of the last episode.
But it is really interesting that, you know, like there's so many connections between the ghost world and the alien world.
I've been saying this for fucking years.
Yeah,
like, I know. And I will.
Everyone who's into them are divorced, unhealthy.
The truth.
Their drinking problems are developing.
Because I realize that at some point I will have to abandon you, my friends, my family, mm-hmm. and go somewhere and really get to the bottom of the UFO scenario. I know I will do that.
Didn't you do that Monday night? We had a little campaign event, and then you just slammed a bottle of whiskey, and I can't even imagine what you said to yourself in the mirror.
I was watching The Defiant Ones. I was watching Dr. Dre and being like, I'm like him. We're going to take over the world. Just being very confident. But no, it's obviously the aliens and all paranormal activity are connected to it's projections of our brains. It's somewhere between another entity using us as a conduit to basically create them. And then that relationship is completely psychedelic. But I also believe that they also have a consciousness. So. Mm.
Mm. Okay, and people say, how do individuals believe in religion?
Well, there you go.
So slap you in the fucking mouth.
You're far away from me today on this episode. You might have to kick me.
So after the session, George and Annie went about quote unquote healing Janet's aura, and it worked for a little while at least. The Hodgson house was quiet for about a week before the activity started back up again. The bed shook, sheets were torn off the bed, and the knocks got so loud that they were heard by the Nottinghams next door.
Ooh.
And the classic pools of water started appearing as well, just as they had in the Black Monk of Pontefract case and in many other poltergeist cases.
Cool.
Then it started to get violent.
Uh-oh.
One night.
From that he said, she said, boom.
Uh-oh, we got Limp Bizkit in the house. The ghost is named Fred Durst.
He keeps turning my hat backwards, and it is unbecoming of a researcher.
One night, Janet said an apparition of an old man sat in the chair next to her bed and put her hand over her mouth and nose, suffocating her. Later, she said she saw another old man sitting on her bed. That old man looked like Vic Nottingham's father. And actually, Janet had a very good relationship with Vic Nottingham's father. He was very friendly to her. And she thought that, like, oh, Grandfather Nottingham is here to protect me from the bad old man.
Okay, we're not going to get too into this.
I just don't like having the two old men fighting over the little girl.
It's a very strange scenario.
Now, I once woke up in the middle of the night and saw an apparition of my grandmother sitting on my bed.
At least she wasn't sitting on your bed. You know what I mean? Wink.
I don't even get the wink, but now was it your grandmother?
Yeah, it was totally my grandmother.
Yeah, but was it just her?
I mean, it might have been some sort of, like, it was either the most vivid dream of my life, or I did wake up one night and there was an apparition sitting on my bed, and it, you know, looked exactly like her.
Was it just your grandma? Because grandparents just want to be around young
people.
She
had died. She was dead.
She was dead. Yeah. Well, you didn't mention that key
element. That's a part of it.
She had died years earlier.
Well, Mark,
why would I be mentioning my grandmother sitting on my bed if she wasn't dead? I thought that was a given.
Yeah, which is his grandmother just showed up and she's
dead,
like,
grandmother.
I said an apparition of my grandmother.
Yeah. But she still could be alive.
No.
Just in a different part of Dirt, Texas.
You're being an obstructionist.
I'm not being an obstructionist.
You're being an obstructionist. You're sitting there, you're a big boulder. You're being a real kidney stone in the urethra today.
Now, Ben, before you say to take the goddamn chair out of the room if it was causing so much trouble,
thank you.
Taking the marbles out,
get
taking
it out. All the, take its coat.
Take all that stuff out. Playfair tried that.
Okay. Yes, they are very thorough.
Yeah, okay.
Very thorough.
All right.
But in one of the most dangerous incidents, the poltergeist instead ripped off the iron grill from a fireplace and flung it towards little Johnny's bed, just missing his head. Almost killed him.
Wow.
Then, not too long after, the entity tore the iron frame from the fireplace, which was cemented into brick, and bent the pipe attached to it at a 32-degree angle. And if this is true, there was no way an 11-year-old girl and a 7-year-old boy could have done this.
If this was Russia and maybe they were put into like a strongman competition from like an early age, which I could see it. But honestly, it was a bent pipe. If you see the picture of it, it's bent all the way back. Like it's a crazy... It's just one of those incidences where you look at it, we're like, that's not possible.
A Wisconsin farm boy might have been able to do it, but these are city folks.
Yeah, these are city folks. And again, you know, that all depends on whether you believe them when they say that they didn't bend the pipe. You know, you can always say, well, they just bent that pipe themselves.
Did they bend the pipe?
No.
All right.
Yeah, little kids.
Bending pipes.
Well, shouldn't be bending pipes.
I'm not even talking about the kids. I mean, I'm talking about like Guy Playfair and Maurice Gross.
It doesn't seem like these guys would do it because they're so nerdily invested in real poltergeist activity that it might ruin it for them.
But we also know that a lot of times people will fake evidence in order to juice what they really believe.
Of course.
And they think it's worth it because at least it gets their story out.
Stan Romanek is the perfect example of that. Stan Romanek, obviously the UFO guy, the one that the Netflix documentary is based on. He obviously was making shit up after a while. He faked all his YouTube videos, but the original videos he had of orbs and the things he saw, I think, are completely legit. And then at some point, but you want to sell the message.
Yeah.
So you have to, you got to juice it.
You got to fake it.
Yeah. Well, these incidents, these are just a few of the over 400 that happened in the first few months. Naturally, the Hodgsons needed a holiday, so they were off to Clacton-on-Sea for a week to gather themselves.
I don't understand how many times I hear stories about like UK like beach vacation spots, and it all just sounds like places where like you sit in a rocking chair and you die on the beach.
Yeah,
it's just cold. It's like 30 degrees out there, and the beach is all rocks.
Yep, just look like, at a pile of garbage bags.
But the night before they left, Playfair took some advice from the oldest living member of the SPR, a one Dr. E.J. Dingwall.
I love this guy. I really love this guy.
Dingwall said if the ghost was rapping, it was time to rap back.
And sometimes when you get in there, you got to throw down your dopest lyrics. You've got to smash them with your mama jibes and jibes about how you have more money and street power than him and how your gat We'll fire multiple rounds before his can.
The old British rap battle.
The rapping and knocking.
Look at that. Knock, sits a, your mother knocking. Sits around the house. That's kind of fun.
Now, what follows is an actual audio recording of Maurice Gross communicating with the spirit using knocks. One for no, two for yes.
Also, I will note, most people do say you should not actually communicate with the poltergeist because it says it encourages the behavior when things are going to increase and get worse. And what do we find out in this case?
Boom!
That's exactly what happens.
Oh. Much worse.
Knock. One for no and two for yes. Are you a male spirit? One for no and two for yes. That's two. You are a male spirit. Did you used to live in this house? You did. Was it more than 50 years ago? Yes.
God.
Did you die in this house? Did you pass on? You did pass on in this house. Now, why are you here? Are you unhappy? You're not unhappy. But why are you here? Is it because you want to give us a special message? No. You don't want to give us a special message. Are you having a game with me? Oh, right.
Oh, Grams.
Oh. As I ask the question, are you having a game with me? It's through the cardboard box and the pillow right at my face. Well, thank you very much. That was a very good answer.
Wow, that's so cool.
It's kind of cool. So literally, a box flew off the table, hit him in the face, and I did hear her in the background, oh, crumbs.
They are a fun bunch.
Yeah, that box, it flew 8 feet with such a force that it made a swishing sound as it flew.
And if you sit and listen to that footage alone with headphones on like I did, and Marcus did too.
Oh, yeah.
Which is good because we're the new version of Guy Playfair and Maurice Gross, but we're going to make it sexy. We're going to make it new.
Uh-huh.
We're going to make it fun.
Uh-huh. But not dull.
You can hear that the knocks are coming from different places in a room. It's like sounds farther away and then it's closer. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. Scary stuff.
Yeah, and Gross and Playfair, they tried to replicate the sound of the box swishing through the air, but no matter how many times they threw that box across the little girl's room, they could not reproduce it.
This is such a fun place to be a kid.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. Mm. Now, the strange thing about Gross is that the activity seemed to happen around him a hell of a lot more than it happened around anyone else apart from the family themselves. In fact, it rarely even happened in Playfair's presence. Now, some people think that there is a connection between how much one is open to the experience and how much one actually experiences, but skeptics say that that's just proof that one hears and sees what one wants to hear and see.
I believe that perception's got a lot to do with it. But if it is really happening, though, I think what is the reason why he sees more activity than Playfair does is because I think Janet really sort of grows to love Maurice Gross. Like they spend a lot of time together. Like she reminds him of his daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's sitting there and he's doing homework with her and he's hanging out a lot and he's become like a comforting presence in the house. And you could see how as she becomes emotionally closer to him, it's almost like she's letting him in on more of the activity that is coming from her own brain.
Dangerous stuff.
So if the more open you are to it, then the more likely it is that you're going to see it. Why haven't you seen anything yet, Henry?
I don't know.
It's weird.
You want it too much. You're too desperate.
I'm out there. I'm looking for it. I watched the skies when Natalie has been because Natalie's been out of town, so I've been alone. So I've had a lot more like one thing I did last night. I was out last night. I drank a bunch of whiskey alone again, and I got a bottle of white wine. And I drank most of that, and I just sat on my stoop, just looking at the skies, just looking for UFOs all the time. They
just
don't
living
come.
Like the woman in the Notebook, just staring at the heavens.
I just
trying
do
to
that
remember the past.
I'm always looking for UFOs. I put myself in scary situations, not really. But I put it, I look for ghosts, but they don't come.
You put yourself in the ooky spooky situation.
I try to.
Yeah.
What do you do? How do you do that?
Just walk into weird spots.
Now, interestingly, when the Hodgsons went on holiday to Clacton-on-Sea, the only incident was when Peggy Hodgson was woken up by the sound of a dog barking coming from Janet's bed. But that will only become important in part two of this series. Ooh. And when the Hanshins returned, the activity picked up right where it left off. A sofa levitated 4 feet off the ground. Janet was thrown 8 feet out of a chair. The entity even managed to freeze Margaret on the stairs. And she was only able to move with the help of Maurice Gross.
And
the
way still they, a fun house. It's not bad.
But they said the way they described the touch was that it felt like pressure. Like it felt like a cold pressure wrapping around them. Almost like a wind tunnel wrapping around them. And all of a sudden they just can't fucking move.
Yeah. Ooh. Now then, the messages started. Peggy called out to the spirit, asking it to write down any messages it had so they could all stop with the goddamn knocking. Much to her surprise, 5 minutes later, she found a message on top of the fridge. It said,
"I will stay in this house. Do not read this to anyone else, or I will retaliate."
Now, it is true that the paper came from one of Janet's notebooks, but Peggy stresses that she was in the kitchen the whole time after calling out to the spirit, and there was no way for one of the kids to sneak in without her noticing. The next message showed up on the living room table. It said,
"Can I have a tea bag?"
Got a double meaning.
Well, Peggy obliged and placed a tea bag on the table. And a few seconds later, a second tea bag, crumpled and torn, appeared next to it, even though Peggy said she was alone in the room. Later that day, Peggy's ex-husband showed up at the house to make his monthly child support payments.
Just thrown at her with a fucking grocery bag full of pennies.
I guess so.
You know
what so.
I mean? Because like, it was very tense every time he showed up.
Extremely tense. Because this guy, of course, the ex-husband, like, he didn't believe any of this stuff. So he'd just show up, give her the money, laugh at her. A lot of times he had his much younger, much more attractive new wife right on his arm.
It's like a movie where they're just like, like laughing at her. Yeah. She's stuck in there. She's completely broke. She's got Maurice Gross who won't fuck her.
Poor
and
kids.
I mean, like, in the end, like, nothing. She's kind of hoping. I think in the little bit, too, it's being like she's also kind of attracted to Maurice Gross, trying to keep him around. And Maurice is just bathing in all the attention.
Yeah.
Could be.
And he's married. You know, he's a happily married man.
Yeah. What's she up to during all this?
The wife?
His wife.
Patiently waiting.
Yep. Look at that.
Now, Peggy, going against the entity's instructions, showed the ex-husband the message in a bid to get him to take her seriously. Immediately after he left, she realized what she'd done and apologized to the spirit, saying she hadn't remembered the last part of the message. And another paper appeared on the table that said,
"A misunderstanding. Don't do it again. I know who that was."
That guy's scary sounding.
Yeah. But it also must be mentioned that the handwriting was pretty damn close to Janet's.
I think that this was obviously, because she did admit to faking some stuff. And
that's pretty
that
intelligent stuff for an 11-year-old.
Yeah. I think that when you're watching Beware the Slender Man, the new HBO doc, and you, well, I guess it's not that new. It's like a couple months old. And about the two little girls that stabbed their friend,
in
according to Slender Man's whims. The lead girl in that, Morgan, I think has the traits of a psychopath. Mm. And I don't buy anything that she says, saying that she believes that Slender Man wants her to join and have her go to the mansion. I don't believe anything. I think that little kids are surprisingly capable of doing like very ornate hoaxes and very clever things. And I think that this is the most innocent thing that you could do. Mm-hmm. This is literally her trying to make her mom feel better, like trying to like do a thing. And she saw her mom be so upset that she just did this little joke, not a joke, but like be like maybe this will help
her. Yeah. It's kind of scary though.
And you know, if she was able to pull this entire thing off, that's pretty damn good trick for an 11-year-old girl.
Oh yes. Yeah, between her and Lisa Simpson, I don't know who's smarter.
Oh my god.
Oh my.
Well, either way. Well, either way, that doesn't explain how Janet was suddenly being thrown from her bed night after night, sometimes followed by Margaret being thrown as well. Janet had also started falling into trances. She would cry and scream the word mummy over and over again, except she pronounced it Mamai.
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 Just weird British nicknames.
And when she spoke in these trances, it was creepy, nonsensical shit like,
"Where's Gober? He'll kill you. Where's Gober? He'll kill you."
Hmm. Yeah, and she did say Gober, not Gozer.
Interesting.
And what's really interesting is that Gober is actually a French word. It means, one, to swallow whole, two, to believe easily without evidence, or three, to take a shitload of acid or ecstasy.
Seriously?
Whoa.
Yeah. Cool.
Gobert.
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 I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that right, and I'm sure people will me know.
No, we don't have a lot of French-speaking people. Although we are gonna be in Canada. We can ask the French-Canadians.
There's plenty of people that think they're very clever speaking French out
there. Gobert! I just want to say go beers, and then I say Pack Attack is on the attack. Go Pack, go. Come on.
Peggy even tried taking Janet to get some mental help at a hospital, especially after these trances, but nothing seemed to get through to her. The only thing that seemed to calm her or the activity down for any period of time was spirit mediums.
Well, also, Peggy was anti any psychiatrist seeing Janet at all because she blamed the son that appears to be sent away for no reason. She blames a psychiatrist for doing that to him, which also then
we don't know what he did.
No way. And you see him with the Halloween mask on, like little Michael Myers after stabbing three or four babysitters.
It was your fault, psychologist.
In fact, in the very beginning, when I think it was when Fallows told her that he was going to contact the Society for Psychical Research, she fainted because she thought that Psychical was more psychiatrists who were going to send Janet away as well.
It's a whole room of them.
Oh, that's
true. Burn the room.
Burn it down.
Now, the second set of mediums, named Luis Gasparetto and Elsie Dubugras, came from Brazil. When they arrived at the Hodgson house, they first went upstairs to get into contact with their spirit guides.
I love Brazil.
That's
all he's got. Don't even worry about it.
I don't know.
Mexico and Brazil are very far apart from each other.
Brazil's different. More like, do they have a lot of that?
That's Germany.
Yeah, somebody. That's closer.
No, it's like,
I don't know. What's the name of those loud things that they play during soccer matches? The Vizula? I don't know.
When the two Brazilians came back down, they yelled at Janet for a while in both English and Portuguese, and Janet was perfectly fine again. Now, this is what Elsie wrote about what she thought was wrong with Janet.
I see this child, Janet, in the Middle Ages, a cruel and wanton woman who caused suffering to families of yeomen. Some of these seem to have come back now to get even with her and her family.
That's scary stuff.
Yeah. Now, both Louise and Elsie claimed that Janet was an extremely powerful medium and should begin training at once to control her powers, kind of like a Jedi.
Oh.
It's kind of cool.
It's kind of like
awesome.
Jedi.
She should have went to Brazil. Oh. Can you imagine that? Having chosen that life instead? Leave fucking this horrible place in the UK. Go to Brazil. Where it's nothing but sunshine, people with their tits out, beautiful butts, beautiful and like horror music.
Men
like,
are very attractive.
Everything.
Hairy,
papayas.
And sometimes not hairy. Yeah.
And of course, Janet never did, which may explain the absolutely shattered state that she lives in today.
Yes.
She's still around, huh?
Yeah, yes, she's just in her like early 50s, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, because she was, 11 in 1977.
She looks, belabor the point, but she looks haunted.
She looks extremely haunted at all times.
Kind of tired.
Yeah. But after that particular spirit healing session, Janet fell into another trance pretty soon after they left. This time, though, she started drawing pictures.
But I think it's interesting because Luis, one of the Brazilian mediums, his main thing was drawing pictures, doing automatic pictures.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like maybe she saw that and saw what he did, or that was like a thing that he didn't do it there, but that's what he does.
Well, Playfair said that they never mentioned it in front of her what it was that he actually did, that he did, because he would channel like Renoir and like draw pictures in his style. Now, Janet, she started drawing pictures of blood and knives.
Awesome.
Or just the word blood over and over and over again. The only picture with any meaning was one of a woman with blood pouring from her neck and the name Watson written underneath. And when Playfair asked Peggy if she knew any Watsons, Peggy replied that the couple who lived in the house before them 12 years earlier had been named Watson. Ooh. Peggy revealed that Mr. Watson had died in the house. As for Mrs. Watson, she had died not too long afterward up the road from a tumor in her throat, just like Janet had drawn.
She's killing people with her drawings.
Wow.
And that's where we'll pause.
Yay. Cool. All right. We got ourselves a real poltergeist here.
Oh, yeah. We'll be back next week with the conclusion of the Enfield poltergeist.
The activity only escalates.
Enfield poltergeist.
It gets creepier.
I think this story is better than the one that was talked about in Conjuring 2.
That's what we're talking about.
Get the warrens out of here.
Yeah. Get the warrens out of here. We don't need Christian superheroes. Like, this is a much better story.
Yeah.
All right.
Maurice Gross is such a good hero. Mm-hmm. He's a genuine,
He's a genuine student of the paranormal. He wants to help this family. Yep. He's got nowhere to go. His wife, what they do with British wives when men go out to war and stuff like that, so they just put him to sleep.
I don't know if that's true. I'm not sure. There's no evidence of that.
Yeah. And Guy Playfair, like, he would make a great surly sidekick. Like, he would be the comic relief, a very dry humor.
Yes, perfect.
Yes. And then Legos. Everyone likes those.
Product placement. And that's product placement.
For Legos, yes. Wow. All right. So, thank you.
Paranormal.
Paranormal. It's all coming together. All right. Let's see. What do we have to do here, Marcus? We want to talk about the Patreon. Thank you for everyone
who has donated
to the Patreon. You are lifesavers, and we love you very much.
Yep. Patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft. If you want to give us any donations whatsoever, you know, we appreciate every single dollar. We appreciate every single donation. And if you want to see us live, you can go to lastpodcastontheleft.com for all of our live dates.
Come watch us drink at you. It is so much fun to see how drunk.
Speak at them.
We can get pretty drunk. You know what I mean?
Well, I want to say thank you everyone in Nashville. We had such an incredible time. Nashville was so awesome. And that city, they call it Music City for a reason, because the music was incredible.
I did not want to leave. Nashville was one of those places.
I was actually kind of upset. We only had one night there, and I would have loved like multiple. We always spend like all of our nights in like, let's go to Glasgow for a month.
Let's go to St. Louis.
St.
Louis was surprisingly a lot of fun.
Oh, they're always incredible. So thanks everyone who came out to the Nashville show.
And also, speaking of Nashville, I want to thank the guys that made the amazing poster for us for the Nashville show. Grand Palace Screen Printing. You can check out their work at grandpalace.us. They're going to be making more posters for us at some of the upcoming shows. They're so amazing.
They made it. It's a serial killer bingo board. It is like,
it's awesome.
It's just so professional, and it's high quality.
It's high quality.
And the knives. Stuff. The knives, man.
Yeah, thank you, Knife Man.
Knife Man.
It's pretty cool.
Man.
Knife Man.
Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Henry Loves You, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel. Oh. Follow us on Instagram. I'm at Dr. Fantasty, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel, the number one. And follow
one.
The Last Podcast on the Left on all of the things that are hypnotizing the American public at LP on the Left.
And check out all the other shows here. Check out Movie Signs with the Mads, with, of course, the very famous Pickle Girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
Able Against High Bad for Everything Political, Roundtable of Gentlemen, Wizard of the Bruiser, Sex and Other Human Activities,
Page seven. You're really starting to say Wizard of the Bruiser without contempt in your voice. And I think it's really nice.
I'm over it. I'm over really life. Nice. I'm over everything. It's it's one of those, like, steps towards suicide kind of things.
Okay.
Cool.
No, I'm just joking. That's it.
Haunting.
I don't know. What is wrong with you?
Hail Satan.
Hail yourselves.
Hail Gein.
Hail me. We're going to get so fucking spooky next episode, you're going to throw up.
I'm kind of scared. The way that you did that ghost voice is scary.
Thank you.
Not that one. That's even more horrifying.
Make installations, everyone.